This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Simon b'shem Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Simon in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, brings four cases related to Chesed. The first case concerns Avrom and the angels. The second case concerns the Moavim, the Moabites, and Am Yisrael. The third case concerns Yisroi and Moshe. And the fourth case concerns Boaz and Ruth. Those are the four cases of Chesed that the Medrash deals with. The first case, the point of Rabbi Simon, is that Avrom did Chesed with the angels who came to visit them, and he gave them to eat very generously and put a lot of effort into that meal. And as a result of that, Hashem repaid him, in that it was through that act of Chesed that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave his children the Mon and the Well and the Slav and the clouds of glory and the pillar of cloud which showed them the way. All of that miraculous experience in the desert, without which they couldn't have survived in the desert, was a reward for the one act of Chesed which Avrom showed to the angels. But, says Rabbi Simon, the angels didn't even need the Chesed, because angels don't get hungry. And they didn't even eat the food. It was an illusion. It looked as if they were eating. And so he makes a kavachomer. So much reward for an act of Chesed, which in fact was not even needed. It wasn't even a real act of Chesed. It was only an illusion of Chesed. And so much reward. How much more so for a real act of Chesed? That's his first Kal Vachomer. Very beautiful. The second one is the converse of that. The Moabites did not offer the Jews water when they were coming out of Eretz Mitzrayim and passing by the land of Moab. Asks Rabbi Simon, v'chitzrichim ayulohem liYisrael, did Israel need water? They had the well. We've just learned that as a result of Moshe's, of Avrom's chesed, Bnei Israel had the well in the desert, so they didn't need water. Nevertheless, Moab is punished in that they're not allowed to marry into Am Yisrael, they're not allowed to convert to Am Yisrael. Lo yovoi Amoni u'Moavi. Ammonite and a Moabite may not enter the community of Hashem. We bar them. There are very few nations of the world who we don't admit into the Jewish fold if they wish. But the Moabites are among them. Why? Because they didn't offer water to us. But we didn't need the water. Such a punishment for a refraining from chesed in a case where the chesed wasn't needed in the first place. Imagine, says Rabbi Simon, what the punishment is for refraining from chesed when the chesed is needed. Also a beautiful Kal Vachomer. Third one is Yisroi. You remember the daughters of Yisroi are out in the meadows looking after their sheep, and they start getting bullied by the other shepherds, who Chazal tell us not only wanted to deprive them of being able to water their sheep, but in fact wanted to rape them. And Moshe saves these daughters. And the daughters come back and tell the story to their father, and the father says, where is the man? Invite him for a meal. That's the least we can do. A man has saved your lives. Let's invite him in. That is a case, says Rabbi Simon, of doing chesed when you're obligated to do it. You're really repaying a debt. It's not really chesed. You're obligated to do that. And what was the reward? Many years later on, in the time of Shul, the descendants of Yisroi were given advance warning of the fact that the Amalekites were going to be wiped out and that they should clear out of the area. Because if they didn't clear out of the area, Shul's men would have killed them too. And Hashem didn't want them killed, although they were close to the Amalekites, because of the chesed which they had done, or which Yisroi had done so many years before. Such a reward for a chesed which was merely the fulfillment of an obligation. Imagine how much is the reward if one does a chesed to somebody that one has no obligations to, just to an ordinary person that one doesn't owe anything to, how much more reward? Also a beautiful kavachim. That's the third case. The fourth case is Boaz. And that's a case, says the Medrash, Rabbi Simon b'shem Rabbi Elazar, Mi hu she'oso chesed imisha tzorich chesed. So who's an example of an ordinary case of chesed? A man who gives chesed to somebody who needs chesed, to somebody who doesn't owe anything to, a strange person who needs kindness and he gives him kindness. Where's such an example? Boaz and Ruth. End of Medrash. No kavachomer. No point. What's the chiddush in the last case? But the last case is the plain case of chesed. In all the first three cases, there's enormous chiddush. There's wonderful creative reasoning and understanding of the situation. Comes the fourth case, and all the Medrash does is says that Boaz, there's a case, there came Ruth, and she was hungry, and she was poor, and she came to Boaz, who was wealthy, and Boaz gave her a little bit of corn and wheat and a few little grains. He gave her a little very basic, poor meal. And that's an example of a case of chesed to somebody who needed chesed, and it's just an ordinary, straightforward case of chesed. Finished. That fourth case is very peculiar. What is Rabbi Simon, in the name of Rabbi Lezer, coming to teach us in the fourth case? And what is the meaning of the whole Medrash altogether? Now, I want to use a principle which we developed last night to understand this Medrash. Last night we learned a Rashi, Perek Kaf Hei, Posuk Further on. Peposuk mem gimel. Lo yisirden vayikro. Lo yisirde voye beforech. You shall not work your slave, your Jewish slave, in a breaking way. Vayoreso me lo kecho, and you shall fear God. And we asked, what is vayoreso me lo kecho got to do with it? Lo yisirde voye beforech is a normal ethical commandment which exists in any social set of laws and in any legal system, that you should not work your employee in a torturous way. You don't need Yirah Shamayim for that. Even atheists will accept that that's a moral practice, that one should not torture one's servants. An Eved Ivri is not even a slave, he's a servant. What's the big thing? And you must be God fearing. Rashi explains, what does it mean you mustn't torture him? What kind of torture are we talking about? Says Rashi, Malacho Shaloi Latzurich, Kedei La'anus, to make him do something unproductive, just for the sake of subjecting him, of exercising your authority over him, just for that purpose, that's called torture. To make a person do something unproductive. Al Toimaloi, we're not talking, we mentioned last night, we are not talking about the degree of the labor involved. We're not talking about making him dig ditches and build roads. That's not what we're talking about. Even a simple job. Don't even say to him, warm this glass of water up for me. Who ain't it sorry if you don't need the hot water? Rake under the vine until I come, if you don't really need the vine raked. You can't tell him to do that just for the sake of keeping him under your authority. Shema Toimar Ein Makir Badova Im Letzorich Im Lav. Good, so you might say, well, that's fair enough, I understand that. That's very ethical. One shouldn't make a person do something unproductive. It's torture to go, somebody says, please heat up the glass, and you go and you heat up the glass, and he says, thank you, and he throws it out. He says, heat up the glass again, please. It's a complete loss of dignity. A complete loss of pride, of self-worth and self-image. And you say, so did I not do it right? Did I do something wrong? Was there a fly in the glass? And you say, no, I don't need the water, but you carry on heating it up. I want to keep you busy. That's torture. It doesn't matter how hard the labor is, how hard the effort is unimportant. What's important is that the job is unproductive. So you might say, good, that's fair enough. But I'll do it then in a way that nobody will know. And I'll tell him I need it. And I won't throw the glass of water out in front of him. I'll wait until he's gone. And then I'll throw the glass of water out. That won't hurt his feelings in any way. He'll think he's doing something productive. Even that we're not allowed to do. Harei hadover azeh mosu lelev. This is something which only you will know. It's true. This is an ethics bein chol lebein chol. This is an ethic which doesn't concern the other man. Because he won't know the difference. Normally we think ethics is bein odem lechavero. Here I'm not harming my friend in any way. He remains convinced that he's done me a good service. He boils the water and I say, thank you very much. That saved me a lot of work. You may now go. And as when he's gone, he's far, I throw the water out. What have I done wrong? Have I done anything wrong? In terms of any other ethical and moral system in the entire world, I've done nothing wrong. In terms of Torah, I've been over an Issa D'oraisa. That's why you need God. You need to be God-fearing for that. If it's just a humanistic ethical system, there's nothing wrong with what you've done. There's only something wrong with what you've done if you bring God into the picture. And we discussed the third dimension last night. That normal ethics, secular ethics, is a two-dimensional ethics. It's me and the other person on one plane. And that's all I have to judge. I have to put myself in his situation. And if I put myself in his situation, there's nothing wrong. If I were asked to do a job of work which was not needed, but I never knew that it wasn't needed, I always believed that it was needed, would I feel bad? No, I wouldn't feel bad because I wouldn't know that it was unproductive. Therefore, there's nothing immoral in letting somebody else do it. And any other two-dimensional ethical system would therefore allow me to ask my servant to boil the water and when he's gone out to throw the water out. Not the Torah. Why not the Torah? Because we have a third dimension. And our third dimension is the dimension of elevation, where we have to be able to lift ourselves out of the situation and look down and see both parties down there, him and me, down at the bottom. And when you see it from up above, the picture changes entirely. Completely different thing. When the first man landed on the moon, he said something quite inane, which wasn't really... What did he say? A great step? Something very stupid. But that's fair enough, because he'd been trying to prepare his vote for how long does it take to get there? 5 days he was preparing his vote. So that's what came out. But they said things, one could overhear them talking to one another as they were going off. That's where you saw what it was really all about. And they kept on talking about such a small world. Look, it really so close together. It's so the moment you pull yourself out of it and you look at it out there, everything looks so petty and so stupid. Russia and America and Israel and Arabs and Angola and South Africa. It looks ridiculous. Look, a bunch of miserable little people on an insignificant little spot in a huge universe, and they're busy fighting with each other. Is that all they've got to worry about in this huge, magnificent universe? They're nothing. They're insignificant, totally insignificant. Why? Distance, elevation. You suddenly see the thing from afar and everything comes nearer. It's a very completely different feeling. That element of elevation enables us to look at the view completely differently. Now when we look down, what do we see? We see a man call in his servant, ask him to boil up the water, let the servant go, and we see the man throw the water out. So we have to ask why. On a two-dimensional plane, you don't have to ask why. Because who's going to ask why? The servant doesn't know, so he won't ask why. The man who's doing it, he knows why, so he's not going to ask why. So nobody asks why. That doesn't mean it's ethical. Ethical is when you've asked why and you've given an ethical answer. But to avoid, to create a situation where there's nobody to ask why, that doesn't mean that it's ethical. And so, once we're elevated there, where we watch this thing, imagine seeing on a movie, see a man call in a servant, ask him to boil up the water, servant goes out, man throws out the water, movie finished. What are you going to say? What was all that about? So you'll have to answer, he did it just to show the servant that he's balabos. That's why he did it. There's no other possible reason. That's inay. That we're not allowed to do. The servant has his own dignity. He's there to help you do work which you need done. That He's not there to be lorded over by you just for the sake of the authority. His balabos is the Ribbono Shel Olam. His balabos is not you. And therefore you can't merely exercise your authority over Him. He's there to assist you if you need His assistance. And if you don't need His assistance, He's there to sit and learn His Gemara and prepare His shir. That's what He's there to do. That's what the element of elevation gives. Gives a completely different moral picture. And I gave you the example last night of the doctor who goes into the intensive care unit, has a patient there who's suffering, a terminal patient who's only got a few days to live, in terrible pain and agony. The family all say he's going to die in any case, we can't even communicate with him in this state. He's suffering, we're suffering, we would be only too happy if something happened and he died immediately. And the doctor says to himself, and what about my patient? What would he want? And the doctor says, I have no doubt that I and any right-minded person in his position would want to die. Therefore, the most moral thing I can do is to administer a little bit of extra morphine and let's just end it. On a two-dimensional pain, that's perfectly moral and ethical. There's nothing wrong with that reasoning. And that's why the secular world is having such difficulty into coming to grips with euthanasia. They feel because of their religious background that it's wrong. But when they argue it ethically, they can't find out what's wrong with it. And euthanasia is in fact practiced throughout the Western world today, in one degree or another. And what is wrong with it? Elevation. Elevation is, if you look at it from the level of elevation, you see a man lying in a bed, a doctor with a syringe. Doctor kills man. Murder. Simple. But when you're down there, you don't see murder, you see kindness. Therefore, one cannot make ethical judgments from down below, from the two-plane level. One has to be able to elevate oneself in order to do that. Just as an aside right here. Hence, quite apart from the millions of other reasons, the importance of remaining a Ben Torah. Let's take that example as well. The doctor himself. So how does he ensure that he's looking at it from an elevated point of view? Only if his mind operates like a Ben Torah. If he's in Torah, and he's thinking in Torah, and his value system is in Torah, all the time he's looking at things from that perspective, then he can operate. But if he's not involved in Torah, then he's down below. And it applies the same to a businessman who's busy working. You're looking on a one-to-one level, you're busy negotiating with somebody, you're trying to cut out the competition, what may I do, what may I not do. If you're looking on a two-dimensional level, that's one picture. Business is business, and fair is fair, and all those phrases, and you can justify murder, and you can justify theft, and you can justify all sorts of things. The moment you lift yourself up, and you look down, and you see yourself and your competitors, two objective people, then my goodness, such viciousness. Is that what it's all about? Is that what life's all about? Are they trying to kill one another? All of a sudden the moral picture changes. But when you're involved in the hurly-burly of business from morning till night and you come home and it's going through your mind all the time and you've got pressure from your bank manager, you've got pressure from your customer, and you've got pressure from your suppliers, and you've got strikes with your labor force, and that's what you're thinking all the time, how are you going to pull yourself out of it and see an elevated picture? The only way is if that's not what's going through your mind all the time. If what's going through your mind all the time is a pshat in a Tosfos and a difficult Ramban and an understanding of a piece of davening which you battled over this morning, that's what's going through your mind all the time. When you come to your business, you do your business and you go home and carry on thinking in a Torah vein, then it is possible to see things from an elevated dimension. But if one's finding oneself all day, the whole day, involved in one's two-dimensional existence, it's not possible to pull oneself out of it and to see things objectively. It's just not possible. And that's why learning Torah is something which has to take place every single day. A day that goes by without learning Torah is a day of destruction and death. There's no way that one can go through this life operating effectively and yet being able to be moral and ethical, seeing things with a spiritual touch, if one's mind is not involved in Torah and in spiritual things. Sometime during the day there's got to be a stop where you pull yourself out and you apply your entire personality into the understanding of a piece of Torah. And that's why it can't be superficial, because superficiality doesn't involve your whole personality. It has to be something which breaks your mind, something which causes you to sweat and to toil, then it is possible for you to find yourself all of a sudden thinking and operating in a Torah dimension and not in the two dimensions. And as far as the ladies are concerned, the whole home has changed in that way. The ladies themselves aren't involved in that. They're involved in chesed all day. That in itself helps. They don't have the problems that the men have. Unless they're working ladies, they find that they're far more spiritual, far more naturally and environmentally spiritually attuned than the men are. And even if for those ladies who are working, if the men themselves are seeing things constantly from a spiritual elevation, that introduces spirituality into the home, and they are elevated together with that spirituality. Now let's look at our Midrash. With that principle, let's have another look at our Midrash. Rabbi Simon b'shem Rabbi Eliezer Oymer bo Dalad Shiti. Rabbi Simon, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, says two, brings four cases. Mihush, case one. Mihush, also chesed im mi sheloya yutzrich. Case one. Who is an example of one that did chesed with a person who didn't need that chesed? Avrom im aloche asholis. That's Avrom with the angels. Ksiv v'hu oymed alehim tachas hoitz v'yuchil. It says, and he stood by them under the tree, and they ate. Were they eating? What kind of angels are those that eat? No, they weren't eating. They made as if they were eating and drinking. And what did Hashem repay his children? Hamon yorad lohem, the mon came down for them. And the well came up for them. Baslov motzui lohem, and the quail was found for them. Ba'anone kovid mekifin oisom, and the clouds of glory enveloped them. Ve'omud ha'onon l'se'a lifnehem, and the cloud, the pillar of clouds traveled before them. Ba'arei dvorim kal v'chomer, and this is a kal v'chomer. Uma im mi she'oise chesed im mi she'ino tzorich l'chesed. If one who did chesed for he who doesn't need chesed. Por ha'akadosh baruch l'bonov, the Ribbono Shel'Olam repaid him. One who does chesed to a person who needs the chesed, how much more so? Very strange medrash altogether. What kind of chesed was it to give the angels food? What kind of thing is it? So he thought the angels need. They didn't need. Surely chesed has to be measured in terms of the good it does. And the chesed that Avram did in feeding the angels did no good at all. It had absolutely no effect. The angels were no better off for it. Nothing would have been different in that scene had he not given them food. And how can the Midrash tell us that all these wonderful things were given to us as a result of a meaningless act of chesed, of an artificial act of chesed, of an illusionary act of chesed, a case where there in fact was no chesed except in the mind of Avraham? So in an unreal sense, he's done an act of chesed, and look at the reward. Another covered, mon, slav, survival in the desert for those 40 years was all guaranteed as a result of this illusionary act of chesed performed by Avraham Avinu. Why is there any measure of importance given to it at all? Very nice, Avraham gives them a meal, he thought they needed, they didn't. A mistake. So he wasted a meal, not the end of the world. No, says the Midrash, this was a wonderful deed. Let's use our principle. In terms of the third dimension, look from on top. What do we see from on top? Angels, Avraham. Avraham giving the angels food. That would be quite a comedy, we would laugh. Angels don't need food, but Avraham doesn't know. It would be a typical comedy. The structure and the material of a typical comedy, we would laugh. It has no meaning up there. On the two-dimensional level, there it has meaning. It's exactly the opposite of the first example that we were discussing. Here, first we were discussing a situation which down on earth is immoral and up above it's moral. Here we have the reverse. Here we have a situation which up above meaning at all. It's a joke. It's all artificial. But down below it has meaning. Because anybody who saw the scene would see it as moral. Anybody who saw the scene would see, if we look at, let's bring ourselves down again. Now we're not looking from up above. Now we've come down to the two dimensions. What do we see? No angels. We see three tired travelers
coming past Avrom, non-Jews, Arab travelers coming past Avrom, Avrom noticing that they're fine people, inviting them in and going to enormous Mesirus Nefesh and expense to give them a wonderful meal. Beautiful. So if we look at it from down here, it's beautiful. It's elevating. It's ennobling. And if we look at it from above, it's meaningless. Says the Medrash, so look, a case which is chesed down below and is meaningless up above, nevertheless God rewards because down below it had meaning, how much more so in a case which is real chesed, where even from the third dimension you will perceive that the act of chesed was done. And the converse is exactly the same. Rabbi Simon b'shem Rabbi Eliezer Omar b'shita chayri. Rabbi Simon in the name of Rabbi Eliezer said another case. Case number two. Who are the ones who didn't do chesed with people who didn't need chesed? The Ammonites and Moabites with Israel. On the matter that they did not offer you bread and water. Did the Jews need their water? Just like the angels, they didn't need the water. They were rewarded. Now one sees in fact what that reward was. They were made as independent of human gratuities as the three angels were who came to Avrom. It's just a repetition of the same thing. Just as Avrom had three guests who didn't need food, so the Moabites and Ammonites had guests who didn't need food. So Yisrael was elevated to an angelic level, where they didn't need food and water. They got the mom, they got the water, they were like angels. But it's a reliving of that situation. Now, but Amun doesn't know that. Amun sees travelers. He sees exactly what Avraham Avinu saw many years before. That's what Amun and Moab see. And Ele Derech Eretz Hu, Habo Min Aderech, there's such a thing as derech eretz. A person arrives back from a journey, you don't ask him whether he's got what to eat, you take him what to eat. So I often people phone up, a person's just come back from overseas an hour before Shabbos, and you have somebody phone him up and say, nice to have you back, do you have something to eat for Shabbos? What's the person going to say? No, I don't actually, please bring me some. What's he going to say if he's a mensch? Yes, thanks, don't worry. Oh, good, fine. I was just worried about you also, and put down the phone. That's not chesed. That's not derech eretz. Derech eretz is you come and you bring. Of course he's got nothing for Shabbat, and if he has, it's none of your business. Derech eretz is he comes from a journey, you bring him food. That's it. Person comes out of hospital, you bring food. A person's in difficulty, you don't ask if they've got what to eat. That's a terribly humiliating question. Derech eretz is you bring. What's the worst they've got? They'll put it in the freezer. Nothing will get lost. You don't ask a person if he needs. You don't go up to a person and say, have you got anywhere to be next Shabbos for lunch? What's he going to say if he's got pride? No, in fact, I was going to be on the street. Can I come to you? He's not going to say that. He'll say, sure, I've got a place to be. And then you'll find out he's on the park bench. Don't say, do you have somewhere to stay? You say, will you come to me on Shabbos? What's the worst you'll say? No, thank you. I've got somewhere to go. You'll say, Baruch Hashem, I'm pleased to hear it. That's derech eretz. Derech eretz is you do without questioning that which under normal situations would require that one do it. Normally, a traveler comes, you give him food and water. The fact that these are special travelers that are carrying with them a portable well and portable food manufacturer, that's none of your business. The normal thing is you offer them food. They didn't. They slipped up. And they were punished for that. Again, let's look at the third elevation. Up there in the Ribbono Shel Olam's world, there's no derech eretz. Derech eretz is unimportant. Does it make that much difference to the Ribbono Shel Olam if you go out to dinner with a tie or without a tie? Doesn't make that much difference to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It makes a difference if you're wearing your tzitzis or you're not wearing your tzitzis, but if you're wearing a tie or not, it doesn't make a difference. I derech eretz. If everybody else is wearing a tie, you wear a tie as well. It's derech eretz. But that's not on the third elevation, that's on the two dimension. So this is a matter of derech eretz. The truth is, B'nai Yisrael don't need food and water. So there's no place for chesed here. If you look it up from the third elevation, you see Am Yisrael, independent, with their food sources, they've got mon, they've got slav, they've got water, they've got everything that they want. And they're walking through, and nobody offers them food and drink, fine, they don't need it. No problem. But when you come down here, what do you see? a persecuted nation just come out of Egypt, you've got to ask yourself, what can they possibly have? They can't have anything. Therefore, I should dash out and run and give them what to eat and what to drink. And if you don't, then on a two-dimensional level, it's a lack of derech eretz. It's only derech eretz. It's not midas. This is not real chesed. That's Rabbi Simon's point. This is derech eretz. This is not midas. This is not really chesed. This is just normal human behavior. Avraham reacted to those three people with derech eretz, with normal human behavior, nothing more than that. Moab and Ammon failed to act with normal human behavior. But in neither case was it terribly important to the Ribbono Shel Olam, or to Bnei Yisrael, or to the Malachim. What was important is that there was derech eretz in Avraham's case, there was no derech eretz in Moab and Ammon's case, therefore there's no coming together. Because you can teach a person who's got derech eretz how to look at a thing from a third elevation. If he's got the two dimensions, you can give him the third. It's not too difficult. But if he hasn't got the two dimensions, you can't start with the third. That's a basic principle in trigonometry. You can only have the third angle if you know where the other two, where the ends of the bottom line are. Otherwise there can't be. There has to be two dimensions before you can make a triangle. And so it is here too. If there's derech eretz, then there's a two-dimensional proper existence. And that's got nothing to do with Torah. That's just ordinary interpersonal behavior. If that is there, one can build Torah on top of it. Torah is the introduction of the height. But Ammon and Moav have not got the derech eretz. And therefore there's no way that with all the conversions in the world that they can become Bnei Yisrael. They can't. There's no way it will work. And that's why derech eretz kodmo l'Torah. That's why derech eretz must come before Torah. Derech eretz is the bottom two dimensions. Derech eretz is the plane. Torah is the height. That's the second case. So again, the kal vachomer is lovely. Barei kal vachomer. Uma imi shelo yoso chesed. We're now on the top line of the second page, of the second column. Tzadi gimel. Top line of the second column, of the first page. Ma im mi shelo yaso chesed im mi sheinu tzori chesed ro ma rei ma por Elohim tzchorum. What if somebody who omitted to do chesed with one who didn't need the chesed, look how they're punished. Mi sheinu yaso chesed im mi sheinu tzori chesed alachas kama bekama. Can you imagine what the punishment is for somebody who doesn't do a real chesed? This is just a matter of politeness. They didn't act politely, that's all. Not terribly meaningful in the world of values. And look how they're punished. Can you imagine if somebody acts immorally and unethically? Never mind impolitely. They weren't immoral and unethical, they were just impolite. But because of that impoliteness, they can never become Yisroel. Imagine if somebody actually acts unethically. What a terrible punishment they will be in for. That's case two. Case three, Rabbi Shimon ben Elozer Oimer Boshito Chori. This is Rabbi Simon, the same Rabbi Simon ben Elozer gives another case. Mihu she also chesed imi she chayev. This was a case of somebody who did a kindness with somebody he was obligated to do kindness to. Yisrael Moshe. As it says, Vayoyim Elohen, Kroem Eloi, Vayoy Chalochen. He said to them, to his daughters, call him in and let him eat bread. And then the Midrash goes into a discussion of when Yisrael was repaid for that, and even though he only did chesed with one Jew, since that Jew was a godel b'Yisrael, who had great impact on the whole of Yisrael, therefore he's repaid so enormously, and his whole nation, all his descendants, are saved from catastrophe many, many years later, because of that one, because he invited Moshe in for a meal. A little act of chesed to a great man. What's the case here? Let's again use the three-dimensional analysis. So if we look at it from down below, what do we see? We see a group of young girls going out, being threatened and being bullied and accosted by coarse young men. Nearby they're standing a fine rov, a godel b'Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu. What do we expect of Moshe Rabbeinu? To interfere, which he does. Very nice act of chesed, Moshe Rabbeinu, beautiful. And then the girls go home and Moshe goes home. End of story. Do we have any questions? No. That's the end of the story. Very nice. They said thank you to him. And off they went. He did his duty. He saved them. Fine. Are we going to worry? Why didn't the girls invite him home for a meal? No, we won't worry about that. Why didn't the girls invite him home for a meal? It's a bit forward. It's not the right thing to do. It's sneers. It's not the right thing. They thanked him, and off they went. So the story is complete. No, nobody would be accused, and certainly not Yisroel. Then they come back. Then we see the scene two. They come back to their home. And Yisroel says, "You were very quick today." And they said, "Yes, we didn't have trouble from the ducktails today. There was an old man there. And he helped us. And he saved us. And we were being accosted by them. He was really a nice fellow. And we said, thank you very much to him." He said, "Oh," he said, "that's very nice. You're very lucky." And they carry on with their daily business. And Moshe carries on with his business. Would we feel that there's anything incomplete? Would we feel that anything else had to be done? No. Very nice story. So, down below, in a sense, it looks okay. But what does happen? Yisroel goes and says, "No, you call him back." What do we feel now? Ah, Yisroel's really been a mensch. That's really nice. Yisroel goes and calls him back. At the end of the story, so now we see the scene the way it really is in the Torah. Yisroel calls him back and he has a meal with Yisroel. What are we going to feel at the end of the story? Who's the hero of our story? Yisroel? No. You didn't ask Yisroel to invite him for a meal, but the hero is still Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, this old man, interferes, saves the young girls, they're non-Jewish girls, he's got nothing to do with them. A bunch of goyim fighting with one another, the ducktails with the girls, you would think that he would just turn around and scat. No, he interferes, and he saves the girls. Wonderful. Moshe's the hero. And Yisroel invites him home for a meal, very nice Yisroel, but Moshe's the hero. So what about Moshe's act, Yisroel's act of chesed? Would we ever say that God has to keep an account of that, and one day he has to repay Yisroel for this wonderful chesed? Yisroel had Moshe for a meal. That's wonderful chesed. That's the least you could do for the man. That's the least you could do. If you bought him an apartment in Har Nof, then okay, then you come in close to the meal you gave him in Gans, and that's all. That's all you give him. And for that you expect reward from the Ribbono Shel Olam for your descendants in years to come? No. What about the third dimension? With the third dimension, we look at it. And there we see, also, very straightforward. Moshe saves the girls. Wonderful. That's a mitzvah, Moshe. You get a tick, you get a star. Yisroel responds with inviting him to the meal. Also, no different. Yet Yisroel does become rewarded in an enormous way. His descendants are saved from destruction because of that action. What was great about the action? Was it a great act of chesed? No. It was infinitesimal compared to Moshe's act to which he was responding. It was a gesture. Do gestures mean anything to the Ribbono Shel Olam? I invite a person to come and stay with me. And he says, "How long can I stay?" And I say, "You can stay as long as you want." He says, "As long as I want, you know, until I get it sorted out, it's likely to be a year or two." I say, "Pleasure, you can stay a year or two." He says, "A year or two?" He says, "You know, my mother-in-law's with me as well." "No, good. So you bring your mother-in-law too." "So, you know, and I've got a couple of dogs and cats. I can't leave them at home. Bring the dogs and cats as well." Fine. In the fellow comes, and he brings a box of chocolates with him. What do I say? It's very nice. A mensch doesn't just walk in, brings a box of chocolates. Very nice. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam say about the box of chocolates? He doesn't know, it's nothing. It's politeness. He does that as he does. He's not doing that to repay me for the kindness. He's not giving me the box of chocolates to pay his rent. That's not what it is. He doesn't think that he's repaying his kindness. It's merely form. It's merely intersocial correctness. That's all. He arrives, brings something with him. Some flowers, a box of chocolates. That's all. It doesn't mean much. It doesn't mean much in the third elevation. But in interpersonal behavior on a one-to-one level, it means an enormous amount. It's menschlichkeit. That means the person's a mensch. That's what it means. A great value? No. Very important? No. It's a menschlichkeit. I was in a shop the other day. There was an Israeli there. And he bought something. And he says, "I kept on telling the shop assistant, I'm in a hurry. Good. So they helped him as quickly as they could. And when they'd finished, they started wrapping up what he'd purchased. And he says, "What are you wrapping up? Ridiculous. Just give it to me and let me get out of here." He took it and he ran, and the shop assistant said to him, "In Israel, they're lucky to get their goods, never mind the wrapping. They're not used to seeing wrapping. It's not important. It doesn't have a value. So then you ask yourself, but he's right. Is the value important? Is the wrapping important? Time is more important. And the cost of the wrapping, what does it do, the wrapping? He's going to get home and he's going to rip it off in any case. In third elevation, the wrapping is unimportant. Has no value at all. But on the one-to-one level, on the two-dimensional plane, it's very important. It's just a nice, it's a finesse, it's a way of finishing off, it's a way of doing things. It's form, that's what it is. It's just a way to present oneself, as a way to present one's product. It does mean something. But it means something only on the two-dimensional level, not on the three-dimensional level. And yet, look how the Ribbono Shel Olam repays the two-dimensional level as well. Yisro's meal for Moshe was a box of chocolate, that's all. It was something very small and very insignificant in terms of what Moshe had done. But the Ribbono Shel Olam repays it years later with saving all of Yisro's descendants because of what he did for Moshe. What did you do? An act of menshlichkeit, derech eretz. Says Rabbi Simon, if that's what happens, about the middle of that page, of that column, if a person did an act of chesed with somebody that he owed a great deal to, in other words, the act of chesed is not really an act of chesed, but it's merely a gesture of politeness. See what the Ribbono Shel Olam repaid him with. Chesed. Imagine if a person does chesed to one to whom he does not owe it. That's it. How much more so will the Ribbono Shel Olam repay him with great reward? Those are the first three cases. But the essence, the center point of the whole Medrash is case four. That's what brings the whole Medrash about. Because the Medrash has a problem. Let's look at case four. There's a poor girl who's followed her mother-in-law with great Mesiras Nefesh, crossed the world, so to say, to Eretz Yisrael, leaving behind her a life of material wealth and prosperity, walking all this way into a life doomed to misery and desperation and poverty. But she did it because she thought it was right, so she's a fine girl. And she comes to with the poor people to collect the leket and the shikha and the payo, all the things that one leaves for the poor person in the field, to the field of a multi-millionaire called Boaz, to whom her husband, her late husband, was distantly related. And Boaz gives her and the Tanakh records it. The Tanakh that's careful with every word, doesn't give us a thing that's not necessary, that's not an eternal value for us to know. Good, I understand recording Avram's deed with the Malachim. That was a great act of chesed because they were angels and they didn't need the food. Nevertheless, God rewarded him. I understand that. I understand recording the Moavi case. We need to know how bad that was. I understand recording Yisro, even though it was just a gesture. We need to know that a gesture is also rewarded. But here's a multi-millionaire who gives a poor person what is due to the poor person. And the poor person really needs it. She's hungry. And the Tanakh makes a big tzimis of it. Every detail is reported. Exactly what he gave her. How he did it. How she came. The whole story is repeated in every detail. What's worrying Rabbi Simon right from the beginning is this part of the Medrash. Why does the Torah pay so much attention to what on the surface appears to be an insignificant and meaningless act of chesed? But now we can understand the importance of this act of chesed. Because this act of chesed is not only important on a two-dimensional plane, once we elevate ourselves to the third dimension, it retains its value. In the Ribbono Shel Olam's world, that was also an act of true tzedakah to somebody who needed it, a mitzvah of leket, of shikha, of peyo. These are mitzvahs d'oraisa, which Boaz performed, and it has value as a mitzvah and as a midah, as a true chesed. This is not gesture and this is not kindness. Although the meal that Yisro gave Moshe was bigger, the mitzvah which Boaz performed with Rus was greater in terms of the third dimension. Because Yisro owed Moshe a lot already, so paying him was not chesed, paying him was merely menschlichkeit. But Boaz owed Rut nothing, and Rut needed it. Avram gave a magnificent feast to those three angels. But the act of Boaz was greater. Because Avraham gave a feast to people who didn't need it, without knowing. So in the third dimension, his act had no meaning. Whereas Boaz gave, it's true, it was only a plate of porridge. But he gave it to an Oni, to a girl who was poor, who was starving, who was hungry, who did need it. And therefore, in terms of the third dimension of the value of tzedakah and chesed, Boaz is recorded in the Torah. That's why it's made such a thing of, explains Rabbi Simon. That's case four. We can only understand case four when we've understood it in contrast to the other three cases. And that leads us to the continuation of the Medrash at the bottom of that column. Omer Rabbi Yitzchok, Limodosocho Teiro Derech Eretz. The Torah is taught one Derech Eretz. Interesting, uses the phrase Derech Eretz. What's the Derech Eretz that the Torah has taught us? Shekesheyehei Odom Oise Mitzvah, Yehei Oise Oiso Belev Someach. When one does a mitzvah, one should do it with a happy heart. One should do it with all one's energy and with everything one's got. Why? Where does the Torah teach us that? She'ilu, for example, Ilu Oyor Ruvein Yodea Shakodush Baruch Hu Machtiv Olav. Had Ruvein known when he was saving Yosef from the hands of his brothers that the Ribbono Shel Olam was going to write in the Torah, Vayishma Ruvein Vayatzileu Moyodo. Had he known that it would be written in the Torah that Reuven heard and saved him from their hands, what did Reuven do? He had him thrown into the pit of scorpions and snakes. Had Reuven known porridge of a certain wheat kind of a grain, then agolim petumim hoyom achila, he would have given her fat calves to eat. He would have given her a delicious fleshy meal, not a plate of porridge. What does that mean? That had they known that they were going to be recorded, they would have done more? That such tzaddikim weren't doing their best? And had they known they were going to get credit for it, that it was going to be reported in the papers, then they would have done better? Is that what it means? That's for sure. What it means is, once it's written in the Torah, that means that the act has a third dimensional value. This is not just derech eretz. If it's just two-dimensional, then you just do what is expected of you. But if it's third-dimensional, this is an eternal value, which the Ribbono Shel Olam never forgets. A value which becomes ingrained in the Metzius, a value which becomes part of reality. You're actually adding to the creation, you're adding another brick to the construction of the world. If that's what it is, then there's no limit to what one should put in to do it properly. So you might say, yes, but that was before the Torah was given or before the Tanakh was written. But what about us today? Rabbi Kain v'Rabbi Yeshua v'Rabbi Simon b'Shem Rabbi Levi Omru. L'she'avar hoyo odom ise mitzveh v'hanovi kosvo. In the old days, a man did a mitzveh and the prophet used to write it down in Tanakh. V'achshov odom ise mitzveh mi kosvo. And nowadays, if I did a mitzveh, who's going to write it down? Answers the Medrash, Eliyahu u'melech ha-mashiach. Eliyahu ha-novi writes down. And the Melech HaMashiach write down, V'akodesh Baruch Hu Chosem Al Yedehim. And the Ribbono Shel Olam signs every one of them. So every time we perform a mitzvah, a document is produced recording every detail. And it's placed on the desk of the Ribbono Shel Olam, who reads it over and stamps his signature on it. That's what happens. Because it has a third dimensional value. It has a value in the world of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So don't think, says the Medrash, that this is something which applied only in the olden days. This applies now too. So when the Meshulach knocks on the door and you say to him, would you like anything to eat? And he says, no, it's alright. And you say, no, and you persuade him a little bit, he comes down and you offer him a glass of water and a biscuit. And really, although you don't know it, he's famished. He's been working from morning till night, and now in the late hours he didn't have breakfast, he didn't have lunch, he didn't have supper, but he doesn't want to trouble you. So he says, no. So you give him a glass of water. And he says, thank you very much. And off you go, and you feel very good. You gave him an adobo for his yeshiva, and you gave him a glass of water, and you spoke nicely to him, and off he goes. That's not the document that gets written upstairs. Upstairs it gets written, there was a Meshulach Reb so-and-so, who was raising money for such and such a yeshiva.
and he got up this morning at 6 o'clock and he went to daven shachris, and from shachris he called on so and so and so and so and so. He didn't stop for breakfast, he didn't stop for lunch, he didn't stop for supper. At 10 o'clock he came to Rabbi Yid's door, and there he had spoke to Rabbi Yid, gave him a glass of water and one biscuit. That's what gets put on the Ribbono Shel Olam's desk. If we would only realize that, what we would only put into it, to the mitzvah. What we would have, we realized that the menu was going to be given to the Ribbono Shel Olam, he was going to see exactly what we've done. How differently would it be? How differently would we operate in any situation of a mitzvah? And very often we have it in our own kinds of lives as well. Like a person's doing a job of work, and he does okay, he does alright more or less, and comes the end of the year, and his boss calls him in and says, you know, I've been watching you over the last 2 months, this particular project you've been in charge of, and here's the records, on this day you did this, on this day you did this, on this day you did this, you achieved A, B, C, very nice, next year I would like to give you a raise of 28 rand a month. He says, my goodness, had I known he was watching that project, I would have done it very differently. I would have been in at the crack of dawn, and I would have worked late at night, and it would have been such a success. Why didn't I know that he was watching that project, and on that he was going to base my increase? So it is with life. Everything that we do, now that we realize this concept of a third elevation, that this is not just Bein Adam L'Chaveru. This is a real thing which we're creating. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is looking at it all the time from up there. He's looking it up from the third dimension. He's not looking at it from down here. From down here, it looks very nice. Meshulach comes in, man sits down with him, gives him tzedakah, talks nicely to him, offers him something to eat. Meshulach refuses. Man insists on giving him at least a glass of water and a biscuit. Very nice. Because we're not looking at it from up there. We don't know that the Meshulach is famished. We don't know that from the two-dimensional plane. When you elevate yourself, and you see the whole picture, then you realize what a wicked man I've been. Here's a man who's been hungry. I should have questioned, I should have known. Of course he's working all day. I should have known whatever he says, he's lying if he says he's not hungry. I should have known that. I should have insisted. But we don't look at it from up there. We become embroiled in the two-dimensional level, and we don't really pull ourselves out of it at all. And finally, the Midrash says in Yud, a few lines lower, Tani Rabbi Yeshua, now we answer a major question. The question that Teruntipus HaRosha asked Rabbi Akiva. If the Ribbono Shel Olam loves Israel, if the Ribbono Shel Olam loves poor people, why did he make them poor? The Ribbono Shel Olam is omnipotent. Why did he make poor people? That's a very big kasha. Chumash says in Dvorim that if you give tzedakah, noson titein lo, if somebody comes to ask for tzedakah, you just give tzedakah generously and Hashem will bless you. Asks Reb Simcha Zissel, why make a poor man instruct me to give him money and then bless me that I get more money? Rather give the blessing to the poor man and then he doesn't need my money. Rikasha. Ramesha says, there's a poor man, you rich man, give the poor man money and I will bless you, rich man, it will be made up to you. Why go the long route around? Bless the poor man directly. Let him get his own money. Why must it come through the rich man? It's all part of the same question. When Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, the Beis Halevi, became the Rav in Slotsk, he had difficulty with one particular balabos, a fellow called David Bunimovich. And David Bunimovich didn't like the Beis Halevi for a number of reasons. Among them was that the previous Rav was Rabbi Yosef Freimer, and Rabbi Yosef Freimer gave a brocha to the David Binumovich, and he became very wealthy as a result of that brocha. And after Rabbi Yosef Freimer died, there was a son. He had a son called Rabbi Meir Freimer, who was a little bit too young to become the Rav. So they brought in Rabbi Yosef Ber Soloveitchik. But Rabbi Yosef Freimer was a Rav who used to keep his nose in the Gemara, and he used to give brochas, and they used to get on very well with him. The Beis Halevi came into Slotsk, because I told you the other day, he turned the place upside down, and he reorganized the committees, and he reorganized the tzedakah organizations, and he reorganized the shechita, and he brought the poor people onto committees, and the whole town became a tumor. And Rabbi David Bunimovich didn't like that at all, and kept on comparing to the way it was in the days of Rabbi Yosef Freimer, and how it would have been had Reb David taken, had Reb Meir taken over from his father instead of this outsider, Reb Yosher Ber Soloveitchik. And Reb Yosher Ber had a lot of trouble from this fellow Bunimovich. And Bunimovich at one stage was also manipulating the markets, the grain markets, which there was a famine and there was a shortage of grain, and he started manipulating the markets at the expense of the poor people. And Reb Yosher Ber got into the market with enormous sums of money, which he borrowed from various places in order to reverse the trend and to take it out of the hands of Bunimovich. So you can imagine what Bunimovich thought of Reb Yosher Ber after that. What kind of a rov is this? Now he's getting involved in business and he's destroyed my business for the sake of the poor people. And he got very upset. One day they had to make a collection. There was a poor man or a wealthy man who'd lost all his money and he needed help. So Reb Yosher Ber went for the only time in his life to the home of Reb David Bunimovich, and he said, "I need money from you. There's a person in the community who's in a terrible state and we need to give him tzedakah." So Reb David Bunimovich said, "Fine, 200 rubles I'll give to the cause, but you must tell me who the man is." Reb Yosher Ber realized, of course, that would be fatal for a man of the coarseness of David Bunimovich to know who he was giving the money to, and refused. He said, and then he said, "Oh, then I don't give you the 200 rubles." So Reb Yosher Ber left his home and said to him as he walked out, "I see that you talk like the great general in the Gemara." David Bunimovich wasn't a big Talmid Chacham, and he felt very complimented by this. So he went around telling everybody that, sorry, before the moment I left the most important part out. Reb David Bunimovich, when Reb Yosher Ber said, "But why are you being so harsh?" He said, Reb David Bunimovich said, "I'm a frum man, and I don't interfere with the Ribbono Shel Olam. If God made people poor, then God wants them to be poor. I'm not going to undo God's will. I'm a man who does God's will, and if he made people poor, it would be wrong for me to undermine his will by making them rich again." That was his taina. And if people used to come and say, "All right, Reb David, I understand you don't want to make me rich, just lend me some money," then he used to say, "You know, I'm a very honest person and I observe the laws of the country. And the laws of the country are that for banking you need a license. I don't have a license to lend money. I'm sorry, I would love to do it, but I don't." That was the man. So as Reb Yosher Ber went out and he said, and Reb David Bunimovich said, "I don't interfere, and if God made him poor, let him stay poor." Reb Yosher Ber said, "I see you talk like the great general in the Gemara." So he went around telling everybody that Reb Yosher Ber said, "I'm like the great general in the Gemara," until he told the Talmid Chacham to start laughing. And he said, "Why? Who's the great general in the Gemara?" So this person said, "Tzuronsa Pusarosha. This was the man who in Bava Basra, said to Rabbi Akiva, if Hashem loves poor people, why does he make them poor?" So Bunimovich said, "Why is he called a Rosha?" So this time Reb Chacham said, "Because he's the same man who killed the Eser Haruge Malchus," which we read about on Yom Kippur. Everybody cries. The man who killed those ten Haruge Malchus, that was the same man. So Bunimovich said, and Rabbi Yosher Ber didn't even say Lahavdil when he said, "I'm like the great general." So he hated him even more. But that was the claim that he used to use. So here says the Medrash, we need to know that the reason that poor people were created is because that the rich man gains more from the tzedakah than the poor person does. Why does the Medrash tell us this now? That should have been the introduction. That should explain why Avraham Avinu's action was significant and why the Moavim should have done what they didn't do, because it's really for the benefit of the giver, not the receiver. The other way around. Now that we've understood that an act of tzedakah is not just a gesture of politeness and it's not just derech eretz, but a true act of tzedakah such as Boaz did with Ruth is something far greater than that. In the third elevation, it's a mitzvah, it's a value, it's the creation of something new. It's a document which is written out by the Melech HaMashiach and Eliyahu HaNovi, and it's stamped with the Ribbono Shel Olam seal. That's what happens to every Maaseh Chesed. Can you value that document in terms of what it cost, in terms of rands and cents? So one gave 50 rand. How much would one pay at an auction if one could get hold of a document with a Ribbono Shel Olam signature on it? How much would we be willing to pay? Especially if the document is one in praise of me. How much would I be willing to pay? How much are people willing to be paid to be knighted by the Queen? How much are people willing to be paid to receive medals for their achievements and their contributions to charity? How much tzedakah are they willing to give to get such recognition? And here we're talking about being knighted by the Melech Malchi Amlochim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by the King of Kings, being delivered with a document which details exactly what we've done. And it costs 50 rand. It's a joke.
Once we understand the third dimension, little act of tzedakah, poor man comes in, rich man gives him a donation, poor man goes out, it doesn't seem terribly important, it seems insignificant in relationship even to the acts of chesed, of Avram, to the three angels, and of Yisroel to Moshe, and yet no, it's in fact more significant, because this is the kiyum halacha, this is the fulfillment of the mitzvah d'oraisa, it's real not only in the two-dimensional sense, it's real in the three-dimensional sense, it gets written down just as Reuven's action got written down, and just as Boaz's action got written down, so this action was written down in every detail, whether you smiled when you gave it to him, or whether you frowned when you gave it to him, whether you gave it to him with a good heart or with a tight hand, every detail is written out. And if that's the case, one has to understand that far more than the 50 rand which the poor person receives from the wealthy person, the poor person has given the wealthy person the opportunity of achieving this greatness. Yesu mimashe balabayis, oyse emaoni, teoni oyse emabalabayis.